Maddie and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
About 11 at the moment, but with that wind chill factor, probably down to about six, yeah, five.
You just made that up.
Yep. Maybe eight. What do you reckon?
I've been nine minus 60 before wind chill factor.
Where at?
It was on the top of a mountain at Wyoming, in the States.
Well, my nephew.
You
works,
take your glove off, and your hands are freezing before you could even.
My nephew works in Canada. And
it's so cold.
Minus 45 quite often. Right,
minus 20 was just the standing around temperature. And then with the wind.
Ooh. That's what it was like bloody yesterday. We had to go up to Charlestown. Spent lunch at Charlestown Macca's. Bloody beautiful. I took my missus out.
As soon as you go north to Charlestown.
That's where it gets colder.
Automatically colder.
It's freezing. Went to watch football. But, got in trouble. 10 past 8. Because Kirst didn't put on the sat nav. So she just.
Hang on. Whoa. So Kirst was driving.
Yeah.
You didn't say, hey, you know what, babe, thanks. You know, I love you so much. Thanks for taking me home and giving Rob a lift home yesterday.
She loves driving.
Can I drive?
She loves driving. And so she always says, oh,
does
you
she
always
say
drive?
That or you just assume that?
She does. She told me. I drove home.
I guess after getting in a car with you, she'd probably be too scared to let you drive.
We had to go up to Charlestown because my little daughter, Henny, was playing footy up there.
She didn't like the sat-nav.
Well, she doesn't. She uses bloody Apple Maps on her phone. And she said, just have a check of it. And so anyway, so I thought, oh, yeah, okay. And then I'm there. Yeah, it's coming up. Oh, damn. I said, we've missed it. And we're running late. And then I'm there.
For your navigating, you couldn't even do that.
Because it doesn't give you a countdown on meters,
you know,
mate.
There's a golden rule in a car. If you're driving, you shouldn't have to navigate.
Well,
you're going
Kirst
somewhere
didn't.
New. That's
Kirst
your
didn't.
Job.
With Apple Maps, mate, it doesn't give you a countdown.
One and only job for you in a passenger seat.
Anyway, so we missed, and we're running late. I'm like, oh, jeez, we missed it. So we then had to go up, come back, and then go down and come back and find into that street. And I'm there. No, she said, you got it right now. Yeah. And then it's coming up. Oh, I missed that street as well. Sorry.
Oh, mate.
Pulling into a car park, pulling out, going again. It was only three times because.
No, three. You stuffed it up three
the
times.
The thing is, because, as I said, with Apple Maps, but as soon as I went to Google Maps, Google Maps gives you a countdown as to how many meters, like 100 meters and turn left.
Fool me once. Shame on me. Fool me twice. Shame on you.
But the thing is, Robert, we made it in one piece. And I'll just show you how to use sat-nav from this day forth. That's all. You know, I think men have issues sometimes.
Don't bring the sex card into it. Oh, you are dangerous.
But I think they do. Men do have issues.
Communication issues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
More so than anything else.
More reading things.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
Yes. Good morning, Robert.
Morning, Patrick.
What do you got for us?
Well, I can empathise with this woman from Melbourne.
Oh, well,
she became bogged while attempting to visit Dartmouth Dam in the state's northeast, in the bush down the Victorian border, sort of round about there. But I've been bogged near a dam before.
That's what I saw the pictures.
It looks solid. And then you drive and you go through this crust into custard underneath.
Yeah.
So she's obviously got bogged.
You can't eat it though.
April 30. Yeah. No, it's not custard. And she had no phone reception. She had a couple of health conditions that prevented her walking about 60 kilometres to the nearest town to find help. She had no other option but to remain with the vehicle. You know what she survived on?
Some drinks, fizzy drinks.
No, wrong.
Chocolate bar.
Wrong.
No, lollies. And something else.
Yeah.
What did she survive on?
You like ruining things, don't you?
What was it?
She survived on lollies.
Yes. and wine.
She had a bag of lollies. And she had some wine. You are despicable.
What do you call me?
Just ruin everything, don't you?
What happened then?
She had no food except for the lollies she'd lollies taken as wine. A snack. A bottle of wine she'd bought as a present from mother. But she didn't drink because the wine was a present from mum. And she was.
So what did she open it up?
A sober lady, allergic to alcohol, violently.
And then she got on it.
Yeah, the only thing she had a juice box.
Yeah.
But that was not going to get her through 5 days.
Didn't she go, so she drank the wine.
They found her.
Went, whoop.
They found her with a car, and it was just common sense that kept her alive, because if she'd have gone wandering off into the bush, staggering after a bottle of wine.
And the thing is, when she got found, the police got her to blow in the bag. She got arrested for high rate drink driving.
But officer, I've only had one bottle over 5 days.
Never mind, she's never drunk before. Look at me and smile. Yes, there we
go.
You, criminologists, have revealed the most common traits of a serial killer. Now, I'm just going to go through them.
Oh, please.
Number one, first sign to look out for is whether someone could be classified as a power junkie. There we go. You, number one.
Okay.
Another common trait is that they are often skilled manipulators. Two, they are able to manipulate the situation in order to pass the blame for their actions.
You're describing yourself.
Serial killers, this is where you come into play, are huge egomaniacs.
You are an egomaniac behind a disguise of not being an egomaniac.
They can also come across as extremely charming and likable. Oh, this just gets worse. And many serial killers, Rob Palmer.
Well, you don't fit the bill then.
Can look like
charming
a pillar,
and likable.
Can look like a pillar of the community on first sight. I am going to never go to sleep from this day forth with you anywhere close by, mister.
You should be careful.
If you know a friend like that.
You should be careful for more reasons than just me.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
You'll see it tonight. Grand finale on Channel 9 NBN is tonight. Three teams fighting out for the title of Lego Masters, Grand Masters and $100,000 in prize money.
It's the best of the best.
Yep. Let's relive last year, though, with Henry and Joth from Newey.
The next names I read out will be the winning team of Lego Masters 2022. Joss and Henry.
We get to say that with one Lego Masters. Yes. Like, what? It's crazy to say we got on Lego Masters or got to the final, but we won.
Will they do it in 2023? Henry and Joss from Newey. Good morning,
hey, boys.
Hey, ooh, morning, guys.
How you going? Is it cold in Newcastle as it is on the Central Coast today?
It is freezing. I am still in bed. Yeah, oh, I'm nice and cozy under blankets as well.
There's nothing
it's very
wrong.
Cold.
Sounds like you two are in bed together.
Well, you did grow up with each other. There's nothing wrong with that.
Top to tail.
Yeah. Hey, Joss, mate, when you watch it on TV, how nerve-wracking is being on Lego Masters?
Oh, look, it kind of just brings it all back, you know? Like, it's pretty nerve-wracking in person, but then, you know, you sort of get some distance from it, and then when it comes back on TV, it's like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Because you're under the pump.
It's very stressful.
Absolutely under the pump.
You are.
And, Henry, like, you see these things, and generally you do your idea at the start, and then you come back, and there's about 1,000 blocks have been laid into some lump of something that you're then going to decorate. That's a lot of grunt work. Does, you know, like in Better Homes and Gardens, you would get 10 people to do the grunt work and you just take the glory at the end. Are you guys actually laying every brick?
Yeah, no, that's right. We absolutely are. And like, there's a lot of footage, obviously. It really is the amount of time that they say they give us. And yeah, it is a bit funny sometimes watching in the edit because you only see 3 stages of the build and it looks like a cakewalk, but sometimes there's just a lot more than that that you don't really see.
Joss, what is a normal, like, filming for, say, one episode, for one build? How long are the hours? How big of day is it?
It takes longer than they say, right?
Yeah, like, you know, you'd probably do maybe, like, a maximum of 10 hours of building in one day. And that's, like, you know, when they really push for time. But, you know, like, your average building day is probably, like, 7 or 8 hours. And, you know, you get lunch breaks and stuff as well. So don't worry, they treat us well.
Yeah,
but it's still a lot of Lego laid in one day.
When Hamish comes over and behaves like a halfwit around you guys and distracts you from the build, do you get to stop the clock for that time?
If they do, that's news to me.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Hamish, do they let you know beforehand? Do they give you some idea of what they want you to create before you get in?
Not really. I mean, the only hint, I guess, is they told us the show was Lego Grandmasters, so I guess that sort of implied go big or go home, you know? It's got to be grand.
Fair enough. You know what? And one of my favourite parts of the show is the elimination process where Brickman breaks down and bless him because he's got a lot of love for Lego. But has Brickman made you guys cry?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think he has, sort of. In a roundabout sort of way, yeah.
Is it because he's so bloody tired that, you know, when you've got sleep deprivation, you become very emotional?
Oh, you can cry at anything.
That's exactly right. Is that one of the reasons?
That's why I cry at every elimination. Yeah, I think it's how they do it. It's exhausted. Yeah.
Well,
hey, I dropped my pen.
Well, tonight is the night. Can you boys go two in a row? We'll find out $100,000 in prize money. Oh. It's the grand finale tonight, Lego Masters. And Josh, are you working at your local Lego store today, Joss?
No. Today I've got the day off. I got phone interviews.
And phone in bed for the rest of the day.
Yeah, and hopefully some party time.
All right, Josh.
Nah,
Henry,
absolutely.
All the best, guys. Look forward to seeing you tonight, and hopefully you can bring it home two in a row. Paddy and Rob Palmer,
the podcast. Do you watch, because I called you after, I think you were watching the Coronation, maybe.
I was watching it on an iPad. No, I wasn't. I was watching the rugby league.
You were watching it over your wife, Kirst's shoulder.
Yes.
Because she was watching it,
and I had one headphone on the rugby league. It went, oh, geez, it went on.
Well, it did, but thank God the rugby league was on, because I would switch from the league
to the quiet
moments of the game or whatever, just to see what it was up to.
It just reminded me when I was at school, because we'd forced to go to church all the time. And then, you know, when it just went on, especially if they're doing the, the Holy Communion and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, and you'd have to keep yourself awake.
Oh, that was the hardest. The hymns. Oh.
It was like a personal challenge to try and stay awake.
What's long? Kirst was getting annoyed because I was saying,
oh, imagine.
What's happening there? She said, what are you watching? Are you watching this or the footy? I said, the footy, but what's happening there?
I felt for the kids in the front row of the choir, because you can't hide that you're asleep if you're in the front row of that choir, because they were always on camera.
Oh, and as well as that, they had to sing all those bloody hymns, which happened all the time. All
quite right. A catalogue of hymns they had. I'll get this. Hello, Triple M.
Good morning. It's the Reverend Father TJ McArdle
from the Church of the Sacrificial Lamb
with gravy and three vegetables. Thank you for joining in, Paddy and Rob Palmer. Hello.
Morning, Father. Was the coronation party your viewing over the weekend?
Robert, yes, it was. As the Church of the Sacrificial Lamb was instrumental in the arrangement of the service at Westminster Abbey.
Yes.
As they used the same blueprint as the coronation that occurred at our church on the weekend.
Who was coronated at the Sacrificial Lamb, Father TJ?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Patrick, well, after coaching his 900th game in the NRL and with his team, the Dolphins, smashing the Sharkies 36-16 in Magic Round, the hierarchy of the NRL, that it was time that Wally Lewis can share the crown with King Wayne Bennett. Hail the King!
Hail the King!
I've got King Wayne with me. If you want to chat.
This would be nice.
He stayed overnight as we both got on the altar wine, and King Wayne normally doesn't drink.
All right, then we'll put King Wayne on then now, Father TJ, please.
Here he is. Thank you, King Wayne. It's Paddy and Rob Palmer, Triple M Central Coast.
Exciting.
Pick it up. Good morning, Wayne. Firstly, congrats on the defeat of the Sharkies, and congrats on becoming King Wayne.
It was like a better name.
That's true, King Wayne. It was like the battle at SeaWorld with the Dolphins and the Sharks. The good fins versus the bad fins, and the good fins won, as you say.
It was good to have shark fin soup, eh?
Yeah. It's the new ruler, King Wayne. Will there be a king's decree?
Oh, there will be. For Darren Lockyer to stop impersonating you. You are easier to understand, King Wayne, that's for sure. Yeah. Aren't you? See you, King.
Good on you. See you, King
Wayne. Hail the King. Jesus. Paddy and Rob Palmer,
the podcast. Now, I'm going to expose you now.
Okay, go on.
For the villain that you are.
What have I done, pal?
We were talking movies in the Triple M kitchen the other day.
Yes.
And Maddie, who works in our building, came through and he said, oh, and we were talking about a movie. He said, oh, yeah, I'm going to check that out on Stan when I log in later. And he looked excited. I said, what do you mean? Oh, well, I've been doing some work for Stan. They've given me a login so that, I can get Stan. I went,
for free.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah.
And Nick Kelly, who works with us, he also had done some work with Stan and had this lifetime Stan. And you have been hassling me for my Stan password so that you can use it. And I only get it on one screen because I'm the only one in the family that uses it. So if you had it and then you were watching something, I wouldn't be able to watch it.
Yeah.
But with Nick Kelly, he has an abundance of these numbers.
Six.
And so you sucked up to this guy who we work with. Lovely
Nick
bloke.
And I have gone used, way back.
Used his
and I love
good
Nick,
nature.
And he loves me.
To draw out of him a code so that you can get free life Stan on your TV. And then we said, oh, Nick, it was pretty kind of you to give Paddy a Stan thing. He goes, yeah, I know. My mum was after it, but I've run out of numbers. So Paddy Gerard. You have
mate,
got Nick Kelly's mum's Stan access and you don't even care.
That is
and you're gonna
absolute,
keep it, aren't you?
That's an absolute lie. There are other people
are
on that service
that
Nick Kelly said he wish he hadn't have given them to.
You,
where he said about me.
When you tune in to Stan next time, when you think of Nick's mum at home fumbling through free-to-air TV, wondering how long it'll be before her son gives her the code to get to his lifetime Stan
supply. I spoke to Nick Kelly's mum and I said, I will
and
review
you said,
the
eggs.
Programs for you, Nick Kelly's mum, and I will pass it on. If there's anything worth watching, I might tape it if I can find my VHS video.
Paddy Gerard, disappointing mothers across the Central Coast since 2023.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
You know how you like to talk with your mouth full of food?
Yes.
If you are at a buffet, this is for everyone, if you are at a buffet and you're with someone that might like to talk with their mouth full of food and they might have a bread roll in their hand and they're like, oh, gee, the food looks good. Anyway, so then we're standing there. We're at the very start of the buffet
this
line.
This is the races on
Saturday.
There's
a whole stack of plates there at the front for people to grab a plate and then go through and you serve up this really nice lunch.
We got
really
callers.
Nice lunch. And then all of a sudden, how good does this look? And then a chunk of bread, chewed up bread comes out of this person's mouth and lands on the top plate. He's already got a plate in his hand, so he thinks, oh, I said, oh, please, mate, you've just spat on the plate. And he goes, oh, sorry, Bob.
I wonder who
laughing.
That might have been.
This is just anyone in particular, laughing. And then instead of picking up the spat on plate and using that, did he or did he not just wipe the bread off the plate
that is a
and
lie.
Move
He's
on.
Made that
did,
up.
And did he or did he not? I'm not saying either way.
I'm not even entertaining you. Lies. Like, look at the Triple M Big Band are doing.
Don't look at me like that.
They're doing. This is from the Coronation Concert.
Oh, brilliant.
Lionel Richie. Now, Benny from Blue Haven, I'm glad he's called because I saw on Facebook he had a strap on the weekend.
Oh, right.
And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Benny.
Hey, boys, a strap on.
Yeah, mate. And so is that because you're a referee in local rugby league. So, mate, are you all guys now having GoPros as you ref the games?
No. So there's three reasons why we wear the GoPros now. One reason is to make sure that the crowd are actually shutting their mouth when they chew their food.
Because that could be dangerous for a referee running down the sideline copping a bit of pie or sausage roll.
Yeah, go on. That's number one.
but the other reasons, guys, we wear them in the 16s and 17s only. Basically, we all know 16, 17-year-old boys like to think they're boxers as well as football players too.
Oh, right.
So it's more to look out for that. And
has that been implemented this year, Benny?
No, it's been in for a couple of years, the under 16s and 17s only. Yeah. And we obviously use it for our training as well. If a situation did arise, we can go back and see what we can do better. And
Have a look at the tape. I wish I was wearing a strap on when I was at the buffet queue at the races on Saturday afternoon.
Now, I text you because Benny goes for the Roosters, and I said, oh, could you call me at 5:40 tomorrow? You might know that as 20-6. And incidentally, that was the score that the Roosters lost by over the Cowboys.
Oh,
you didn't call me at 20.
I was just wondering, Rob, actually, if you got a message about 8:15 from one Paddy Gerard too, or was I just the only lucky one?
No, I didn't. I get text straight after the game because you know what he does? He has a little black book and next to each name in the book is the team that person goes for. And what he goes through the book after every match in the NRL just to rub salt into the wounds of his friends.
I did text you at 8:25 last night, Paragon. That's all I text you. So something simple.
Thanks for that. I needed that.
Hey, Benny, I know you would. This would be a good time for you to get in some budgie smugglers. We've got a $100 budgie smuggler voucher for you, buddy.
Beautiful, mate. I'll get in them and start doing some plumbing around the radio station. I'll make sure you're there to see it.
What a treat.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
Robert, this man had the best seat in the house on Saturday night as the coronation was showed from Channel 7.
Wow.
It is Hugh Whitfeld. He is European correspondent. He joins us out front of Windsor Castle this morning. We're not worthy.
Oh,
so,
hello.
Hugh, good morning.
Yes,
Hugh.
Good morning, boys. Good morning.
Mate, what a seat you had on Saturday night our time for the coronation.
Yeah, look, amazing spot for those thousands of people as well who waited in the rain on the Mall and then got to surge forward towards Buckingham Palace for those two balcony appearances by the King and the Queen. Of course, the first one with other members of the royal family, like little Prince Louis there waving his hands very gleefully. But an incredible, incredible day. And I don't think, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but the rain certainly didn't dampen the crowd at all. And a fantastic and majestic display of what the Brits do best. They do it better than anybody else.
Gee, it took a long time to get through it, though, didn't it, Hugh?
Oh, it was a bit long.
Yeah, I know. I was on air for about 8 hours, so it was a big day.
I just kept saying, not another hymn, not another hymn. Oh, God, there's another hymn.
Come on.
It's a good lesson that, you know, cars have made things much quicker in this world if we're all running around in horse-drawn cars. So it's taken forever.
Sure. Yeah. Hugh, and a lot of the talk is about Harry. Did he rack off straight away after?
Yeah, he did.
He did?
Yeah, it seems as though he did. There was a car that came and got him kind of after most of the, I guess, VIPs had left the Abbey. He and Andrew were kind of hanging around outside, very separate from each other. Very, very obvious they didn't want to get caught in the same frame of a photo together chatting. They were very separate, and then Harry jumped in a black car, got driven straight to Heathrow. He was up in the air, landed in LA, and then kissed Archie, we hear, goodnight, on his fourth birthday. So his plan went according to plan, but there are reports just in the last couple of hours that the King hosted a buffet afternoon lunch for the family in the palace, and he actually made a toast to Archie on his fourth birthday, and he made this heartbreaking line that, you know, happy birthday to Archie wherever you are. And, of course, this is the grandson that he's barely seen because the Sussexes have taken the kids over to California and they haven't brought them back to London. So a bit of a difficult moment for Charles, no doubt, on what was a massive day for a 74-year-old man.
Yeah, hard to hang around for Harry, though, when you know no one likes you. Does the
Well, it would have been awkward for him, yeah, for
yeah.
Harry.
What does the public think of Harry over there? Are they sort of off him now, or they still love for him?
No, I think it's fair to say they're off him. Definitely considering that he's kind of tipped a can on the rest of the royal family, and in doing so, Britain, because, you know, everyone who we've seen out and about over the course of the last couple of days celebrating the new king's reign and his coronation, they support the royal family. They don't want someone like Harry to be constantly bad-mouthing them. And you get the impression that maybe the Americans are a bit off him by now as well.
Yeah, he's the Rob Palmer of the Central Coast, that's for sure. I did notice in the coronation that massive diamonds, are all of those suckers real, like in the crown and on the sword and all that sort of stuff? Are they cubic zirconia or rigidige?
They're real diamonds pulled from the ground in South Africa. In fact, some of them were cut from there's five of them that were cut from one massive diamond called the Cullinan diamond from South Africa, and it must have been enormous because the ones that were cut off it are still huge. One of them sits in the front of the Imperial State Crown. There's another one on the top of one of the scepters. Look, they're worth millions. That crown, the solid gold crown that he wore, is worth something like £45 million. So what, $70 million? It's nuts.
Holy moly. That's massive. Speaking of money, there's a few people, I mean, a lot of people over there struggling with cost of living, and he's gone and spent, I don't know, a whopping
180?
Amount of taxpayers' money on this coronation. Is there a bit of public backlash about how much that they have spent, given the way that the country is feeling right now?
Yeah, look, I think it's fair to say that it's not 100% support for what happened yesterday. Not 100% support for the monarchy either. And, you know, some people very disappointed in some parts that those people who were out to protest the coronation were locked up by the police very, very quickly. But it is going to be expensive. We haven't seen the final bill. It's likely to be something in the order of $300 million Australian dollars. That is a lot of money for anything, particularly a one-day event that doesn't really need to happen because it doesn't happen in other royal families across Europe. But having said that, if Britain's going to hang on to anything about its past, these sorts of rituals that, I guess, display the splendour and the majesty of something that only they can really do, then maybe it's worth hanging on to. But certainly there's a lot of people who are going to question that for sure.
Hugh Whitfeld, European correspondent from Channel 7. Thanks for joining us, mate. You did have front row seats at the coronation. And see your reports on Channel 7 today.
Good on you, Hugh.
Good on you, fellas. Cheers.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast. Subscribe now and you'll never miss an episode.